Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Thursday, October 6th, and I'm Nat Cardos reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, CAL FIRE to conduct prescribed burns near Redway October 8th through the 11th, Community First Credit Union issues a statement on financial assistance amid government shutdown, Humboldt Planning Commission downscales U-Haul signs after public outcry, and Humboldt Bay Fire hosts open house to kick off Fire Prevention Week October 11th. So stay tuned. Those stories and more coming up.
Redwood Community Radio acknowledges that its transmitter sites are located on the unceded territory of the Tsingkiyon, Wailaki, Wiyot, Wilcut, and Kato people. We honor ancestors past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the ongoing cultural, spiritual, and physical connection these tribes have to this region.
October 8th through the 11th, CAL FIRE will be conducting the final stages of the Redway Shaded Fuel Break SFB project, with the implementation of a prescribed burn across approximately 84 acres near Redway between Evergreen Road and Highway 101. The dates of the prescribed burn are subject to change as they are weather dependent. KMUD News spoke with Jeremy Ward, Fire Prevention Bureau Chief for the CAL FIRE Humboldt Del Norte Unit, for more information on what the SFB project is.
So this has been a multi-year project to reduce hazardous wildland fuels, and part of that work has been mechanical or manual thinning of the forest fuels, and that's been done through a variety of methods using private contractors primarily. They went through and hand thinned things. They used masticators to reduce some of that fuel. They used weed eaters, and they spread some of that fuel out and then chipped parts of it. And this next component is going to involve the use of prescribed fire over across about 84 acres, roughly north of the Evergreen Road subdivision area.
All material removed in the SFB project is either lopped and scattered or chipped into mulch to reduce fuel continuity. This is to break up dense vegetation, reduce fire hazard severity, and promote healthier forest conditions within the wildland-urban interface. This is the final phase of the project, and it's planned to further reduce residual fuels in the northeast portion of the treatment area that they have been working on. The project itself is a collaborative effort between the CAL FIRE Humboldt Del Norte Unit, Southern Humboldt Fire Safety Council, and the Humboldt County Resource Conservation District. This project is a result of the ongoing efforts to improve the resilience of Southern Humboldt communities made by Southern Humboldt Fire Safety Council. Here's Ward on what people can expect and to keep in mind.
Well, right now we just want to make sure that folks are aware that this is going to be happening to hopefully this week. Again, weather dependent. You know, other things we do want to remind folks are, one, stay clear of the fire resources, give them some space to work if they are working nearby the areas where our public are at. And also a reminder that even though we've had a little bit of rain recently, burning is still suspended. We did have some folks burning illegally recently, and there were some citations issued to some folks out there. So we want to make sure that people understand that it is not yet safe to burn. We will let the public know when it is safe to do so, and to please make sure that they're not conducting any of those activities yet.
CAL FIRE advises drivers to be cautious when driving around fire suppression resource traffic, smoke, and to know that traffic control may be in place during this project. Please be cautious for your safety as well as those working on prescribed burns. For more information about wildfire preparedness, the website is readyforwildfire.org. A proposal to add signs to a U-Haul outlet in McKinleyville has been downscaled following public outcry. Daniel Mintz reports.
With public opposition newly surging, a majority of Humboldt County's Planning Commission has decided to scale down additional signage for a U-Haul facility in McKinleyville. The October 2nd decision caps a months-long debate on the corporate business's large-scale branding and moves the project forward after the commission deadlocked on the issue last month. The project, sited at the former Kmart and Ray's Market buildings, requests modifications to a conditional use permit to allow additional signs. U-Haul has made concessions, including removal of all signs except for one backlit sign on the U-Haul facility's north building facing School Road. But with all other proposed signs still in play, including on the more sizable former Kmart site off Central Avenue, public opposition has increased. Prior to the hearing, the county got 17 letters and emails against the added signage, and opposition was voiced during a public comment period, including from McKinleyville resident Charles Perkins.
I'm here to say that McKinleyville residents overwhelmingly oppose new signs for U-Haul. The new sign standard notwithstanding, not one person I've spoke with approves of this. My daughter sampled Facebook. She found 4 comments in support of U-Haul with hundreds opposing them. There was a comment in your September meeting to disregard social media comments, but that's how young people communicate. You cannot ignore that. My generation goes to meetings, their generation goes to Facebook and Instagram. Please listen to them. It's overwhelmingly clear that McKinleyville strongly opposes U-Haul's request. McKinleyville is a residential community, while from my view, U-Haul is in fact an industrial scale facility, which for me should not even be permitted in McKinleyville.
Another resident said the signage is not, quote, the kind of feeling we want in a small town McKinleyville residential section. The manager of the U-Haul facility reiterated comments he'd previously made, telling commissioners that most of the added signs are, quote, directional and, quote, we definitely need them. Commissioner Peggy O'Neill, a McKinleyville resident, voted against the sign proposal previously, and Commissioner Lorna McFarlane, who was absent for last month's gridlock vote, both said the added signs shouldn't be approved.
I haven't changed my mind, so in fact it's even more made up because more people have come out, and I'm not anti-business, but I haven't seen an option that says this is what it would have to look like if we stayed within the sign ordinance and this is how we need to deviate because people can't find the doors. So I think that they can live within the ordinance that we passed, and that's going to be my vote.
I'll just say, as McKinleyville resident that drives past that every day, I agree with the signage would certainly change the feel of the community, but I also feel like to not listen to the overwhelming output from the community would be disingenuous, both as a McKinleyville resident and a greater Humboldt County resident.
But they were open to a compromise proposed by Commission Chair Ivor Skavdal to approve the added signs but remove several decorative orange storage door signs from the main building facing Central Avenue and reduce the sizes of directional signs to make them less visible from Central. Commissioner Thomas Mulder questioned whether those restrictions are necessary.
This building right here, it's been a while since I've been up to McKinleyville. That's probably almost 200 feet off the road, just thinking off the public right-of-way, just shooting from the hip. So
from Central?
This we're is... being...
Sorry to interrupt.
Go ahead.
500 feet from Central, actually.
That building is 500 feet from Central Avenue. So we're being asked to ask someone to that's 500 feet from the public right-of-way how they design their building. I just want to make sure we're saying this correctly, that someone on private property, 500 feet from a public right-of-way, we're asking them what to do with their signs. I'll leave it at that.
The signing compromise, as proposed by Skavdal, was approved in a 3-1 vote, with Mulder voting against. For KMUD News, this is Daniel Mintz.
Community First Credit Union has released a statement following the recent U.S. government shutdown, offering several relief programs for what, quote, could be a source of stress and financial strain, unquote. Julian Jackson reports.
Since October 1st, Congress has failed to reach an agreement on spending proposals, leading all aspects of the U.S. government deemed non-essential to shut down. Community First Credit Union, with 11 branches across Northern California, including Garberville, released a preemptive statement on September 30th and another on October 3rd, both reassuring customers that their money is safe, while presenting helpful resources credit union members can access that could assist with government shutdown-induced financial instability. The most important reassurance being that all deposits at Community First Credit Union are still federally insured by the National Credit Union Administration up to at least $250,000 per member, which does not change during a shutdown. 3 of the 4 main resources offered are different types of simple loans, including the Emergency Relief Loan, described as an easy-to-get $1,000 loan with 0% annual percentage rate, or APR, for 12 months, and no payment due for the first 90 days. Similarly, their Rapid Dough Loan is a $500 loan that promises to be delivered in minutes with no credit check, 18.99% APR for 12 months, and no $20 origination fee if the loan is related to the government shutdown. Additionally, there are flexible rates and terms available for a shared secure loan, which borrows against the receiver's Community First Credit Union savings or certificate account. Furthermore, as an additional resource, the credit union offers Skip-A-Pay, which allows members to skip two eligible monthly loan payments within a 12-month period. For this, there is also usually a $20 fee that will be waived if related to the government shutdown. In both of their statements, the credit union says, quote, "Please know your credit union is here to support you with relief options designed to help you and your family through challenging times," unquote, along with a final message of, quote, "We're committed to standing by our members in uncertain times. If you are impacted by the government shutdown, please don't hesitate to reach out," unquote. For more information, you can go to comfirstcu.org/personal and click the Apply Today button, visit a community credit union branch near you, or call 707-546-6000. That's 707-546-6000. I've been Julian Jackson, reporting for KMUD News.
Humble Bay Fire is hosting their annual open house during Fire Prevention Week to provide important safety information to the community through activities and tabling of organizations like Eureka Police and Humble Bay Fire Hazmat Team. Gabriel Zucker reports.
During National Fire Prevention Week, Humble Bay Fire is hosting their annual open house on October 11th from 10 a.m. to 1 p.m. at Station 1 on 533 C Street in Eureka, California. During the event, firefighters and other public agencies will provide important fire prevention information and share safety tips with community members and host fun activities for children. Here is Stephanie Vongelkon, the administrative assistant for Humble Bay Fire, with more information on the event.
There will be CERT, and there's going to be Public Health and Safety, who also does car seat installs and car seat checks. Eureka Police will be there as well. So we'll have our hazmat team as well for our kids to check out, and then our tiller truck will do a demo of a rescue above our shop.
For any community member unable to attend the open house, Stephanie Vongelkon pointed to the Humble Bay Fire social media.
We try to post on our social media, but during like the winter time, we'll have safety tips for the winter. And during wildfire season, I don't believe we've put that on there yet, but we will have something up this week for National Fire Prevention.
The Humble Bay Fire Team is promoting the message Charge Into Fire Safety, focusing on the importance of working smoke alarms. The campaign focuses on the importance of installing, testing, replacing, and recycling lithium-ion batteries. For more information, go to the Humble Bay Fire Facebook page at facebook.com/HumbleBayFire/, or their website, hbfire.org. Reporting for KMUD, I am Gabriel Zucker.
In state news, State Senate Forum hears tribal environmental representatives on health of fish populations, KPFA's Anthony Perrazzo reports.
The California State Senate held the 50th annual Zeke Greater Fisheries Forum Wednesday to hear concerns about the sustainability of fishing practices. Fish populations face various challenges, including climate change and dams and rivers blocking fish from their natural habitat. In 2023, four hydroelectric dams blocking the Klamath River were removed, and there has been a notable increase in the number of salmon. Barry McCovey Jr. is the senior fisheries biologist for the Yurok tribe, who depend on the fish in the Klamath River. McCovey talks about successes he's seen from environment restoration efforts.
Largest dam removal project in history, probably one of the largest fish restoration projects in history. Fish are returning. We saw fish returning last year. Fish are starting to come back this year. We're doing a lot of restoration in the Klamath. There was a huge federal investment, and there's been a huge state investment into restoration in the Klamath.
McCovey says climate change is a major problem for sustaining fish populations.
We're seeing, you know, higher water temperatures. We're seeing catastrophic wildfire and the impacts that that has on fisheries. The tribe hasn't had a successful commercial fishery since 2015.
Charlton Bonham is the director of California's Department of Fish and Wildlife. He says fishers have been facing hardship, especially tribal members.
I mean no disrespect to our commercial sector. When I say some of the most emotional moments for me have been when our tribal chairs tell me they don't have fish for their beginning of creation ceremonies. I saw Chair Atterbury of Karuk last week because the leaders were in town for their tribal forum. Mm-hmm. And he told me for the first time in, I think, 3 years, they had fish for those ceremonies. That feels good, mm-hmm. compared to the worst alternative.
Wade Crowfoot is the secretary of California's Natural Resources Agency. He says securing funding for fisheries can be difficult due to the federal government.
All bets are off. I can tell you that we're working professionally with our colleagues in these federal agencies to make the case for continued investments. These are investments that support rural economies. They support the fishing sector. They demonstrate success. So our focus is doing what we can through state funding and, again, cutting the bureaucracy to get these projects in place and to continue to make the case. I can tell you this, as remarkable as the state investment has been, thanks to you all and Governor Newsom, it's not enough. You know, the federal government simply can't divest in our fisheries in order for our fisheries to recover. Just can't happen.
Federal funding cuts could affect Native peoples in other ways. A new report from Portland State University found that budget cuts under President Donald Trump's new spending bill threaten nearly half of federal funding allocated to Native American and Alaska Native nations last year. The congressionally allocated funds help provide clean drinking water, affordable housing, schools, transit, and land management. Officials say there are serious concerns among tribes in the Northwest about further cuts, including air quality funding. Reporting for KPFA, I'm Anthony Perrazzo.
California groups push for veto of bill that would raise fees on car sales. Public News Service's Suzanne Potter reports.
A coalition of California consumer and small business groups is asking Governor Gavin Newsom to veto a bill that would allow car dealers to more than triple the fee to process registration and title for a vehicle. Right now, fees are capped at $85 for many dealers. Senate Bill 791 would allow dealers to charge 1% of the purchase price or a maximum of $260. Richard Holliber with the Consumer Federation of California says dealers often spring these fees on the buyer at the very end of a sale.
It shouldn't be a gotcha fee that is suddenly presented at the last minute. The consumer is usually very excited about buying the car and is just going to shrug and say, all right, whatever. It is unfair.
The bill's author, State Senator Dave Cortese, said in a statement that dealers need to recover their costs, noting that California's new fee would still be lower than the national average. An earlier version of the bill would have capped the fee at $500, so $260 represents a compromise in the eyes of lawmakers. In other states with no cap on fees, some dealers charge $1,000 or more. Attorney Gregory Babbitt with the Auto Fraud Legal Center in San Diego says the document fee should be related to the actual costs to process the paperwork. Costs, he says, have gone down, not up.
In this day and age, most car dealers submit everything electronically to the DMV. I don't think that there's a need to increase the doc fee because it's just a way of charging consumers more.
Supporters of the bill include major car dealers like Tesla, AutoNation, and CarMax. Governor Newsom has until October 13th to sign the bill, veto it, or let it become law without a signature. For California News Service, I'm Suzanne Potter. Find our trust indicators at publicnewsservice.org.
In national news, government shutdown continues as Republicans link Dems to Marxism, Dems see attack on health care. KPFA's Christopher Martinez reports.
Friday marked day three of the federal government shutdown, with effects starting to show up in places as diverse as school football for military families and services for Native Americans. But in Congress, Still no sign of an end to the impasse. Another Senate vote failed to advance a Republican bill that would reopen the government. Republicans want to pass a short-term continuing resolution to reopen government at mostly current spending levels. Republican House Speaker Mike Johnson put the issue in starkly partisan terms, taking aim at the Democratic leader of the Senate.
The Democrats are stalling that because they need a political talking point. And why? Because Chuck Schumer, who leads the Democrats, is terrified that he's not going to win back his Senate seat. He's afraid that the Marxist far-left corner of his base is going to challenge him in New York.
For President Donald Trump, the shutdown is not so much an obstacle as an opportunity to move his agenda. He's used it to target federal spending in Democratic states, and he's talking about shutting what he calls Democratic programs. Republican leaders like Johnson seem to be leaning into that approach. Johnson said, when Congress turns off the lights, it shifts authority to the executive branch.
So whomever is sitting in the White House gets to then apply their lenses of review. We happen to have a Republican, a conservative administration. We're very grateful for that. We're limited government conservatives. We think the government's too big. We think the federal government is too big. It does too many things, and it does almost nothing well. And so it serves the taxpayers to send less of their hard-earned money to Washington and keep more in their pockets. That's what we're advancing through the One Big Beautiful Bill and all the legislative priorities that we achieve. But see, sometimes Democrats, not sometimes, all the time, Democrats don't agree with that because they love big government. I mean, listen to them. They want the government to control every aspect of your lives, and they need all of your hard-earned dollars to do that. In fact, they'd like to take them all. That's what the socialists are arguing for. That's what the Marxists believe.
Republicans also argue that Democrats want to fund benefits for what they call illegals at the expense of services for citizens. Democrats say they want to protect health care for everyone. Hakeem Jeffries is the House Democratic leader.
Just to be clear, everyone is about to experience dramatically increased premiums, copays, and deductibles because of the Republican health care crisis. Everyone in America. And as that happens, they'll know that this is a result of Donald Trump and failed Republican policies who have launched the largest assault on health care in American history.
Jeffries also sees a broader agenda from Republicans and the administration.
Well, Donald Trump and Republicans have shut the government down as part of their ongoing effort to inflict pain and suffering on the American people. This is day three of the Trump shutdown, but it's day 257 of the chaos that Donald Trump and his administration and Republicans have been inflicting on the American people, including mass firings that they've already done outside of a government shutdown. This is who they are. Cruelty is the point when it comes to Trump policies.
The Senate is scheduled to take up the issue when it reconvenes Monday. In other words, the shutdown will continue into next week. Reporting for Pacifica Radio News KPFA, I'm Christopher Martinez.
And in National Native News, Antonia Gonzalez reads today's headlines.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A resource guide to help small and medium-sized governments in the Great Lakes region adapt to climate change has been published. Chuck Kornbach reports that some tribal communities in the area are already trying to reduce problems caused by higher temperatures and additional flooding.
The guide is from the International Joint Commission, or IJC, which helps implement the Boundary Waters Treaty of 1909 between the U.S. and Canada. Liz Kirkwood of the IJC's Water Quality Board says climate change has brought more severe storms, loss of ice cover, and extreme temperatures to much of North America, including the Great Lakes region.
In 2024, extreme weather disasters cost the eight Great Lakes states more than $13 billion U.S. dollars combined. Some of the costliest disasters happened in the last 5 years.
While debate continues over how to reduce air pollution that contributes to climate change, the IJC has published a guide aimed at helping small and medium-sized governments adapt to the new temperatures and heavier rainfalls. Charlie Rasmussen of the Great Lakes Indian Fish and Wildlife Commission says his organization welcomes the sharing of best practices, funding ideas, and other strategies. He says the commission's 11 Ojibwe member tribes in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Minnesota are already taking steps, sometimes in collaboration with local, state, or federal agencies. One project being Ishkaday. That's using prescribed or controlled fires on land next to water.
They help maintain and reestablish native species
that do the best job at holding the soil and able to resist, you know, some of these severe precipitation events.
Rasmussen says other tribes are putting in larger roadside culverts to reduce highway damage from flooding and to help wildlife move. He says tribes also share TEK, or traditional ecological knowledge.
It encourages building relationships with plants, animals, and water as living beings rather than just a natural resource that you manage.
The International Joint Commission says it recognizes its climate adaptation guide has some gaps, including needing more content from First Nations and island communities. For National Native News, I'm Chuck Quernbach.
Family, friends, and colleagues from across Indian country gathered Friday and Saturday on the Oneida Nation in Wisconsin for funeral services to honor Ernie Stevens Jr., chairman of the Indian Gaming Association. Stevens is being remembered as a longtime advocate for Indian country and for making strides in Indian gaming. During visitation on Friday, streamed online, his son Brandon Stevens said he was an amazing tribal leader who fought for Native voices, sovereignty, and future generations. And above all else, he said he was a family man.
To his family, he was more than a leader. He was a man who loved us without hesitation, who protected us, and who always reminded us that family is everything. No matter what we did in our lives, good, bad, or ugly, he looked straight through us and said, "You are my children, and I love you."
Stevens died suddenly at age 66 on September 26th. U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski says temporary federal funding for 14 tribal broadcasting stations in Alaska from the Bureau of Indian Affairs will help keep the lights on, but says the job is not done. In a recent statement, Murkowski said the funding will help some of the state's most rural radio stations make ends meet for now, but it's one-time funding. $10 million in BIA existing funding will support Native-serving stations in the U.S. This follows the rescission by Congress of $1.1 billion for the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. October 1st marked the first day public media operated without federal funding. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thanks for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Javier Rodriguez. And thanks to our reporters, Daniel Mintz, Julian Jackson, Gabriel Zucker, Anthony Perazzo, Suzanne Potter, Christopher Martinez, and Antonia Gonzalez. KMUD News is online, and you can find us on KMUD.org and now streaming on most podcast platforms, including Apple Podcasts and Spotify, where you can download our stories and newscasts for offline listening during your rural commutes. You can also follow us on social media. If you have questions or suggestions, you can give us a call at 707-923-2605 or send an email to news@kmud.org. Are you passionate about your community? Looking to report on what's happening around Mendocino? KMUD News is looking for stringer reporters from the Mendocino area to cover local Mendocino stories that matter. Whether you're a seasoned journalist or just eager to learn, we'll help you get started. You'll get training, support, and a chance to amplify real voices from your community. If you're interested, email news@kmud for more information. Redwood Community Radio, Inc. is funded by Press Forward, the national movement to strengthen communities by reinvigorating local news. Learn more at pressforward.news. Reporting for KMUD, I'm Matt Cardos.